This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Para Corporation, a general contractor seeking professionals who want to make a difference in the community. More at parac.com/careers.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. Members of the U.S. House have been out of session for quite a long time, but Democratic Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski of Illinois expects that Republicans and Democrats will have some major disagreements when Congress reconvenes in September. Budzinski returns to the Politically Speaking podcast to talk about her expectations and whether Illinois will join a nationwide redistricting frenzy. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, an in-depth examination of Missouri and Illinois politics.
The instant we got to Illinois, we joined the Green Party. This was 2000.
So I've tried to push for those that I think are honest and really care about the future of the city.
You know, this wasn't a path that I thought I would choose in 2012 when I was able to win the closest Republican victory in the nation.
If it's something that will help Southern Illinois, I'll work with them on it. If there's something he's doing wrong, then you got to fight him on it.
I believe very strongly in the Second Amendment. I believe less government is better, and I believe local control is better.
I choose to fight for working families and for union members.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum. Joining us in studio, he covers all things Metro East for St. Louis Public Radio.
Will Bauer.
And the congresswoman for the beautiful and scenic 13th Congressional District of Illinois, returning to the show for the third time.
Nikki Budzinski.
Welcome back.
It's great to be with you guys.
Now, before we talk about national issues, I want to talk to you about a Missouri-based thing that you did. I was not expecting to see a photo of you and St. Louis Mayor Kara Spencer that was posted to social media last week.
I dropped by her office.
Her office, yeah.
Yeah.
What prompted that, and what did you all talk about?
Yeah, well, it was my first time actually in City Hall, which is a beautiful building, by the way. I had never been there, but the mayor invited me to meet, and it was just an opportunity, as she had just recently obviously been elected, an opportunity for me to introduce myself. You know, I've always viewed this work that we do from a regional perspective. I want to see St. Louis be successful because I think their success is then our success on the Illinois side. And so I wanted to talk to the mayor about how we can partner together on different issues. We talked a lot about aviation. The aviation industry is actually a really big industry, obviously, within the whole St. Louis region on our side of the river, as well as obviously for the city of St. Louis, Boeing, Gulfstream, Westar. I just attended recently an aviation summit with our St. Clair County Chairman, Mark Kern, and the governor actually was there just to underscore the point of how important that industry is. So how Mayor Spencer and I can kind of work together collaboratively to lift all boats in this region. And that's really was the purpose of our meeting.
So you're headed back to Congress after about a month off, is that right?
Maybe a
little more?
I don't say it's off, Will.
Okay.
I was working.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about, because you've been busy during the time away from Congress.
Yeah.
But what have you learned over that month?
Well, it's actually been an invaluable time to be spent in the district meeting with constituents. There was so much that had happened prior to me coming home, namely the big ugly bill, as I refer to it, and talking to constituents, healthcare providers. I just did a long-term care roundtable actually in the district on how Medicaid and these deep cuts, the $900 billion of cuts that was in the big ugly bill, how that's going to impact long-term care. So there's a lot going on in Washington. I focused a lot of my attention on the impacts of reconciliation in that one ugly bill. Also food insecurity, talked to a lot of food banks, communities that are dealing already with food insecurity, $187 billion of cuts to SNAP, how that's only going to exacerbate the problems that are already existing in a lot of the communities I represent. So it was a great opportunity to hear directly from constituents about what is top of mind. And there, as you know, so much going on.
And it appears there's going to be another spending fight probably right away when you get back. So start of the fiscal year, October 1st, I think, was the deadline. What are you, or are there priorities for the spending bills, even though you're in the minority, that you want to see?
Yeah, I mean, in the budget, which I do hope we get to a budget at the end of this year, we don't continue to do what they refer to as continuing resolutions, which is also kicking the can down the road just to keep the lights on of the federal government. But actually, a federal budget, I have 15 different community project fund opportunities that have been approved through the appropriations process. You know, I would highlight two in particular, or actually a few in the Metro East area. I continue to be very focused on Cahokia Heights and addressing the flooding issues that have been happening in that community. I've been working with Senator Duckworth on a community project fund, funding for the East Interceptor, which is a big infrastructure project that needs to be invested in. Within the Cahokia Heights area, I've been working with Senator Durbin on another community project fund for a study. It would be the first of three studies that need to happen in the area to really get a full view for the Army Corps of Engineers of all the things that need to be happening to finally reach resolution on these issues. That first study, about a $500,000 community project funding project, I'm hoping to see funded in the federal budget that will help unlock issues like Spring Lake. Spring Lake is one of the biggest issues in Cahokia Heights that we need to address to put this issue, these issues to bed. So those are just two. I get, as a House member, you get to identify 15 different projects like that that are priorities of your community. And I've been advocating for them. They've each gone through the appropriations process. We just need a budget.
Now, you mentioned Medicaid, and one of the very controversial parts within the Medicaid piece is the restriction on the medical provider tax. I don't know what the medical provider tax is in Illinois. In Missouri, it's 5.2%. So by 2030, it's really going to affect it as it gradually goes down. Republican Senator Josh Hawley has filed a bill to prevent those medical provider taxes from ever going into effect. Mm-hmm. I know he's faced some criticism from Democrats, like, why did you vote for this, even though you did not like that part. But given that there are a lot of Republicans that do not like that part of the big, beautiful bill, is it possible that maybe Democrats could use leverage in some sort of budget standoff to force Republicans to pare down or completely repeal the medical provider tax restrictions?
Yeah, well, I do agree with that. That state provider tax is a huge issue, and it's going to really hurt a lot of the dollars that we're trying to bring in, Medicaid dollars, into the state of Illinois. So I've already signed on at the federal level to actually support repealing big parts of the big ugly bill, of course, a lot of the provisions related to Medicaid, but that state provider tax is one of the top ones. I think it's going to bring it down to about 3.5% in Illinois, and we know that we rely on that in the state of Illinois in order to ensure that we are being able to fully fund our Medicaid needs of the state. I will say for us in Illinois, and I know Missouri has different challenges related to Medicaid, but for us, we already have a very low Medicaid reimbursement rate. We're ranked 47th in the country. So we know that our Medicaid providers are already, you know, things are running very thin. You know, it's very difficult to kind of make their budget as it is. Then you add on these cuts, and the effects of the state provider tax is going to really feel it. They're going to feel it.
So back in March, there were a number of Democrats that were pretty upset with a small number of Senate Democrats that voted with Republicans to avert the shutdown. Dick Durbin would be one of them. With this round of budget mm-hmm. negotiations, is that something that you'd be willing to embrace as like a strategy, or do you not find that to be a good idea? How do you kind of view that?
Well, look, I think the way the Republicans are approaching these big issues, whether it's the big ugly bill or at least in this way in this budget, is it's not negotiated on a bipartisan basis. And so I think we're seeing some possible signs of life on the Senate side. There have been a few of the appropriations bills that have been negotiated on a bipartisan basis, but the House has been very deeply partisan. And so I think in order to vote for a budget bill, I would have to have, you know, I'd have to have assurances that we've been a part of the negotiations, that this isn't going to further hurt our communities. What the impacts of the big ugly bill are going to do to Medicaid and SNAP, we cannot afford to be hurting our communities, the most vulnerable in our communities, any more than what Republicans have already done. And so we would have to see the details. I would have to see the details before committing to that.
So House Oversight Chairman James Comer said he's received some of the documents that that committee had subpoenaed. And I know that's not your territory, your ag and Veterans Affairs. And that's regarding Jeffrey Epstein. I don't know if I said that. Do you think that's a worthwhile endeavor for the House Oversight Committee to be looking into it?
Look, I think that President Trump said he wanted to release the files. Release the files. You know, it's like it's kind of odd as to why he's been dragging his feet after this was such a big deal during the campaign and a commitment that he made, especially to his base voters. Right. I will say that being said, with all that is happening and what I have heard about from constituents around, fear that they have of being able to maintain their health insurance, fear of being able to feed their families, that is what is top of mind for me and how I can help them. This political mess that the president has found himself in with Jeffrey Epstein, I think he should release them and put the issue to bed. But I'm going to be focused more on the communities that I'm so proud to represent and how I can be helping the constituents that elect me.
And I understand that this is not affecting the Metro East directly, but the other reason Illinois is in the news is that President Trump has made, I would say, a lot of noise about sending National Guard troops to Chicago. And I'm just going to be really honest here. I'm going to break the fourth wall of this podcast. I'm a Chicagoland native. And I did not grow up in the city of Chicago. I'm a suburban kid. But I had a really visceral reaction to the idea of troops being sent to the place where I was born.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure people in Washington, D.C. felt the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Even when, like, there was discussion about bringing National Guard troops for the tornado, the question I asked is, how is the largely Black affected area going to react when they see people with guns patrolling their neighborhoods thinking they may be confiscating their houses? So now that we're doing may do this in Chicago with people with no crime fighting skills, the National Guard, what can Democrats do to counteract this, given that it does seem that the president has a lot of power over the National Guard and the military?
Yeah. I mean, I share a lot of your concerns, Jason. I would just say I think Governor Pritzker has done a good job of having a united front and basically telling this administration that you're not welcome. I mean, I think that this is a manufactured crisis by this administration, I would argue, perhaps to distract from political issues like Jeffrey Epstein, or fill in the blank, the fact that he made a commitment also on day one to reduce the costs of groceries, and he's failed to do that. And you can see that failure if you go to the grocery store right now and look for a pound of beef. You know that prices are going up. He's failing on the issues. He's failing on the commitments that he made when he was running for president, and so he's distracting. I would say if this president is really serious about fighting crime in this country, we should be empowering and fully funding our local law enforcement, who are already strapped for resources, already understaffed. One of the things I've been prioritizing in the district is trying to work with local law enforcement to educate them about COPS grants, because if funding becomes available again for COPS grants, those are one of the best things we can be doing to support and bolster their efforts. But you know who zeroed out COP grants? Donald Trump. So, you know, it's just, I think it's a fool's errand. I think what Democrats can do is Governor Pritzker has been standing with local and state folks, I think making it clear where the city of Chicago stands.
So one of the other things Trump has done over the last month or so is directed the Texas legislature to find five more Republican seats in their state's congressional maps. And Governor Pritzker's kind of hinted around, you know, maybe Illinois should be part of the Democratic response to that. So do you think that's something the Illinois legislature should take up?
Look, I want to make a point at the top is to say, you know, I think, again, a manufactured crisis, a distraction from the issues because he's losing on the merits and the substance. He's taking health care away from people. He's taking food away from children with his big, ugly bill. So he knows on the issues he's not going to win in these midterm elections. So he's looking to states like Texas, who are Republican-controlled completely, and asking them to do something pretty unprecedented, which is a mid-decade redistricting effort. There was no one calling for this until they realized the numbers didn't add up and they were going to lose the House majority. So to look to cheat. And so that's what they're doing. They're going down to Texas and they've redistricted. And so I think to your question, Will, you know, look, I think I agree with the governor. All options are on the table here. There is so much at stake for this country right now. And it is so important that we take back this House majority. I'm not going to stand in that way.
When you ask Missouri Republicans, why are you going to engage in mid-decade redistricting? Some of them are very honest. They're like, we want to make sure that the Republicans keep the House. I appreciate their candor. But then they like rationalize it by pointing to Illinois and point to the map there and point to your district in particular and say, Democrats were super aggressive in 2021. We need to just do what Democrats did in Illinois. Obviously, that was done in 2021 with more recent census numbers, and this is being done in mid-decade with outdated census numbers. But Illinois is being used as a foil to justify this. And I think that as an Illinois member of Congress, I'd like your response on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's why I have signed on to federal legislation. I think at a national level, we should be redrawing our districts. We should let data lead the way, but no one state is going to unilaterally disarm. You know, it has to be a federal approach, and that's why I think it's so important that we take a federal approach to this and not this cookie cutter approach. I do just want to point out, because I have looked into this, because there has been so much talk about this, you know, in the country right now, Republicans already draw 191 different House seats. You know how many Democrats draw? 75. And then about another 160 some districts are drawn by an independent commission. So it really is inaccurate and disingenuous for Republicans to cry poor here. I just think this is, again, a distraction, because if they knew they could win on the issues, they would do it. They know they're losing because they're taking health care away from people and they're making children less food secure.
And I suppose the problem for state Democrats, Illinois state Democrats, will be, is it possible to find another Democratic seat if you did want to respond to Texas or Missouri? Do you think it's possible, given how gerrymandered the map already is, to find another seat?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And I think that the way I've looked at this question is cross that bridge when we get to it. I will say we are in the middle in Illinois of circulating petitions already to qualify for the ballot. I think that adds an additional logistical challenge. I'm not trying to say that that can't be overcome, but it is not my decision. It is a decision to be made in Springfield.
There is an assumption that Democrats are going to do better in 2026 because it's a midterm, Republican president. Typically, you know, the president's party does poorly. You have the economy, you have immigration. But I think there's been polling showing the Democrats are not doing spectacularly well. Even with the question of the National Guard I just mentioned to you, there's some fear that people speaking out against this who are Democrats could be implicitly saying that Democrats don't care about crime and that crime isn't a real issue. Do you think that Democrats can do better in 2026, given all these factors I just mentioned?
Yes, I think because there is just so much at stake for this country, and the direction that the Trump administration is taking us on is a direction that we have to course correct. But I also do think, to your point, Jason, I think Democrats have to offer a vision for this country and how they're proposing to make life easier for people, how to help people keep more of what they earn, save money. What's the relief we're going to be offering? And I've been working on the vice chair for policy of our new Democratic coalition. We're the largest coalition actually within the House Democratic Caucus, taking a center-left approach. And it is finding things like proposing legislation, as I have, to make high-speed internet access more affordable. It's about taking on PBMs, the pharmacy benefit managers, who are the middlemen jacking up prescription drug prices. Democrats aren't afraid to do that. I support tax cuts for the middle class and working class, not the top 1% in this country. You know, it's providing real working people's relief. And I think if we put that values proposition out there with a real plan to do it, I think we're going to win. I think we'll be unstoppable.
Well, thank you, as always, for coming in person and for all of our stories on both Missouri and Illinois politics. Make sure to go to stlpr.org. And I was going to ask you where you can find yourself on social media, but I have another ending question for you. Mm-hmm. When you hear the term Illinois values, what does it mean to you?
I think it means common sense, practical approach to getting things done. I think it means leading with compassion and empathy. That's what I think.
Well, I think Illinois values are all those things. as well as our great Metro East reporting by Will Bauer.
Ah,
wow.
That's
not what I was expecting.
I was going to make a joke about Illinois' less good qualities, but as an Illinois native, I'm not going to do that.
You can't do that, Jason.
Can't hate myself. Anyways, and how can people follow you on social media?
They can go to Budzinski.house.gov. We are on social media. Check us out. Follow us. We get around.
Thank you very much. And until next time, so long. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.